Welcome to the third episode of Nos Audientes. Yes, that's right, third episode. You may be saying to yourself, oh, wait a minute, what happened to episode number two? And I'm counting episode number two as happening because Aaron and I both tried to record it twice, and neither time it came out the way we wanted, so we had to scrap it. So this is episode three, live with it. Anyway, I'm Jeremiah O'Shan. I'm joined by Aaron Campo. We had a good week this week. We got a point, at least that qualifies as a good week in the Sounders season so far. We tied 1-1 with Houston, a game that we dominated, that we probably should have come away with 3 points. We only came away with one, but in the context of everything, you know, getting a 1-1 tie when you need the equalizer in the 80th minute actually feels somewhat like a relief.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't really feel that way after the game. I do now. I think that you've got to take what you get, and what the Sounders got that on Friday night was another way above expectation performance from the opposing goalkeeper. That's three games that the Sounders have played, and three games where the consensus man of the match of the game was the opposing goalkeeper. Tally Hall was excellent, and with that being the case, you can't be too upset considering what the Sounders created, despite the fact that I took out some of my frustration on my seat on the evening, and I have the bloody knuckle to prove it. I think that we can be satisfied, I guess, with the draw.
You know, and it was a game that I think the Sounders, you can take a lot of positives away from it. The Sounders dominated possession. You know, I'm sure it won't be quite as apparent when I watch the full replay as it seemed at the time, but they definitely dominated the scoring chances. They were, you know, they were pushing forward. They were doing all the things I think that we want them to do. And it's just hard, at least for me, to feel too down about that game just because there was a lot of genuine positives in terms of the way the team played. Obviously, the results weren't what we wanted. We need to see more of those chances converted into actual goals. That said, you know, it was not a bad performance from almost, I mean, from a coaching standpoint, I would think you look at that game and you're not really sure what do you tell your guys, because they're putting the shots on target. They're creating the chances. You can't really coach putting it into the T, as they say. V. Sorry, I said the T. I meant the V.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if there's one thing you can tell anyone, it's tell James Riley not to concuss himself the day before the game. Zach Scott was not terrible, I guess. He was better than I was expecting. You know, James Riley definitely offers more from that spot. And aside from that, everybody played well as far as I could see. I haven't had a chance to watch the full replay yet. And, you know, you don't see everything from GA, obviously, or really from anywhere in the stadium, but I think especially GA. But with that said, I think what we've seen throughout the progression of the first three games, you know, in LA, there were chances created, and I think the Sounders were largely wasteful. There were some great saves made, but, you know, there were also some just really poor misses and some possession giveaways that really shouldn't have happened. Against New York, I think that they were greatly improved. And then against Houston, you know, I thought that they played Houston off the field, and Houston got, I don't want to take anything away from their goal, but there was some luck involved, especially considering the questionable nature of the foul that led to the free kick. And the Sounders created some fantastic chances. O'Brien White had that snap header. Zach Wani missed the open net, and it's kind of amusing that their one goal came probably from the worst corner we've ever seen Eric Freeburg make, and Zach Wani just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Speaking of the Jeff Cameron goal, watching the replay of it, at first I thought that he just kind of hit it right into the top corner of the goal. As it turns out, he actually hit it kind of low, and it deflected off of Jeff Park, and it barely... So it was ricocheting from below, which is why it probably stayed in the goal. It was a pretty fluky goal. You know, Jeff Park obviously came about an inch away from, you know, saving that shot as opposed to, you know, hitting it in. Not to say that it shouldn't go as an own goal or anything like that, but it was a little bit of a fluky goal. The way the ball came out off of the free kick, which hit off the crossbar, it's just, you know, there's not a lot of defending that you can do to prevent those kinds of things. And the Sounders goal, you're right, was very flukish in its own right. You know, Steve Zakuani doesn't get to just tap balls in like that very often.
No, and, you know, but if that's what it takes maybe to restore some confidence. I don't even know if that's the right way to put it, but I mean, the team has to feel good about finally getting onto the board. And, you know, maybe if that's what it takes to get them from trying to force things on occasion, if that erases a little bit of the frustration from the way the season started, then I think they have to be happy with that. And you're never going to be disappointed with getting a goal gifted to you. And now I'm hoping that maybe we can see something created rather than just kind of falling in their laps.
Yeah, and I will say this, that I think that if the Sounders were bound to only get a point out of this game, it was much better that it came in a 1-1 tie than a 0-0 tie. I think a 0-0 tie would have had the Sounders feeling much more frustrated, and you know, you start to wonder if you're ever going to get a goal. I think getting that first goal at least takes some of the mental pressure off of the subsequent games. But speaking of that game, I think we saw an example of a coach pushing most of the right buttons. You know, Siggy, for, you know, all the frustrations, you know, I don't think there's anything you can fault from a coaching standpoint in that game. That said, I do know, the reason I say that is because the Sounders played well, they dominated possession, they did all the things you want them to do. That said, I know you are frustrated about the benching of Alvaro Fernandez.
I am, yeah, and, you know, we talked about this earlier, and I think that you made a good point in saying that Brad Evans being in there was probably at least in large part due to James Riley's absence and maybe needing someone that could track back a little bit better and offer more of a defensive presence on the right side. And I think that if this were an isolated incident, I could overlook it. It wouldn't really bother me that much. But I think it's a pattern with Siggy and his usage of Alvaro going back to last year. And, you know, I know that there are some people that aren't all that impressed with him as a player. They think he slows down the attack. I've heard a few people say he gives the ball away really easily. I'm not sure that I've seen that. But, you know, with that being said, I think that he's clearly one of the best 10 outfield players on the team. I think that at this point in time, we've got four players competing for two positions. And that wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world if I thought Siggy was ever going to use any sort of rotation system. But I think what we're going to end up with is somebody deserving of a lot of playing time, not getting very much of it at all. And I fear that that player is going to be Alvaro, because I think Siggy, like every coach in every sport, has his blind spots. Unfortunately, in this case, his blind spot seems to be something that drives me absolutely insane, and that is maybe emphasizing speed and what he sees as being a strong work rate over skill.
Well, and let's reset that a little bit. You know, you mentioned that there's four players essentially vying for two positions, just so everyone's kind of on the same page with where we're going with that. We basically consider the right side and the more forward central mid position to be those two positions that are essentially being contested. And those four players shouldn't come as a big surprise to anyone, but it's Alvaro Fernandez, Mario Rosales, Eric Freeberg, and Brad Evans. Now, with all four of those players seemingly healthy now for the first time, we do have a situation where Siggy's forced to make some kind of balance. And I think we can, you know, it's a nice embarrassment of riches in a way to have that you have four players that are capable of starting at only two spots. But at the same time, it's going to lead to a lot of discussions like this where we have, you know, some disagreements as to who those two players that should be playing based on the first three games of the season. I don't know that you're going to find a whole lot of people that don't want to see Eric Freeberg out there. And I think you and I are probably both on the same page that Eric Freeberg of those four players seems to have shown the most in terms of possession, passing, creativity, work rate. You know, he seems to be the closest thing to a whole package, which maybe leaves us with an unfortunate situation where we really have three players vying for one spot. And you have Mauro Rosales, who I don't know is 90 minutes match fit yet, so maybe he's not really in contention, but certainly you have a disagreement or debate to be had over Brad Evans and Alvaro Fernandez. And it's a tough one.
It is, and it's funny because I think, you know, the first time we did this podcast, we were having this debate with Eric Freeberg and Brad Evans. And, I personally don't think that there's really any competition between the two. I think Brad Evans is a good player. I think Brad Evans is an underrated player. But I think that a lot of what Brad Evans does is kind of done by Oswaldo Alonso and at a much higher level. And, you know, for a team that has had some some struggles creating chances to replace, you know, a more offensive-minded center mid position with somebody who's basically – Brad Evans is, I guess, a box-to-box player, but he's really more of a body in the attack than someone who's going to create a lot. And, you know, I think Alvaro is the best fit at that central mid position. I love Freeburg on the right. I think he's looked fantastic. And I know that Alvaro is more comfortable playing there. He's played there more often in the past. But, you know, he's played there more often in leagues that are a little bit stronger than MLS. And with his skill set, especially in Siggy's, you know, his attack, I think that Alvaro is probably perfectly well-suited for that center mid position. And it's probably my own prejudice and you know, against Siggy in this sense, but I don't think he's going to end up taking a lot of playing time away from Brad Evans, and I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, and I mean, I just it's hard to figure out how Freeburg fits into everything. I mean, I think we like what we've seen. I think that we like how he's fit in, but I do wonder if his presence and the way he has played has kind of forced Siggy to rethink some of his plans at the beginning of the year. I certainly would like to think that Alvaro has not fallen out of those plans. I think Alvaro is still far too good of a player to not be used essentially with starters minutes. And I think, you know, it's weird to me, but he definitely seems to be one of those players that there's a lot in the eye of the beholder where, you know, to you and me, we see someone who is tactically setting up his teammates and kind of taking time to survey the field and trying to figure out the best option, and other people see him slowing the game down and kind of grinding it to a halt, which, I mean, I suppose those two things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, but it is it does show how, you know, people are certainly capable of seeing the game differently from, you know, different vantage points.
Yeah, they are, and, you know, I think that Siggy has things that he likes to emphasize, and those things aren't what I would necessarily choose to emphasize with the players that are available. I think that, you know, we saw in the playoffs last year, LA was able to completely shut down Seattle's offense with Niasse and Zakimani because they were so one note. All they did was run. And with, you know, Zakimani can still provide that on the left side. He's definitely gotten better in terms of his skill, but I mean, his biggest weapon is still his speed. And so I think it's good to have somebody that can kind of switch things around and give the opposition a different look in Alvaro. But, you know, to be fair, Freeburg is kind of the same way. I mean, Freeburg is not going to run anybody to death. He just seems to be, I guess, more in tune with the way Siggy wants to do things. And, you know, I think that he's pretty firmly in the starting 11 now. So it's really going to come down to Alvaro and Evans, and then when he's eventually 90-minute match fit, Rosales.
So I guess that brings us to the next position that now seems to be of a little bit more contention now that Nate Jaquia has made his first appearance. I thought he looked pretty good. He played about 30 minutes against the Dynamo. He didn't necessarily get heavily involved in the game, but his presence did seem to have an effect in that he was a player that had to be accounted for. He was, you know, mixing it up inside the box. He was doing the kind of things that, you know, we want Nate Jaquia to do. What's your preference? I mean, do you want to see him ultimately starting over O'Brien White, or were you encouraged enough by what O'Brien White was doing yesterday that you kind of want to see more of him?
Well, I think that ultimately my preference is for Jaquia to get the majority of the minutes, because I think what O'Brien White brings is so much different than any of the other forwards that Seattle has in terms of his pace and, you know, his ability to get behind defenses, that I think he's a great late-game substitution. You know, from what I've heard, O'Brien White was probably at his best game against the Dynamo. When the Sounders were attacking the north end, it was kind of difficult to see exactly what he was doing. And so I only saw 15 minutes of him in the second half. And, you know, he didn't really do anything that special in those 15 minutes. But watching some of the highlights and, you know, kind of seeing what he brought, I thought he looked quite good. But I think you're right. I think Jaquia looked very good as well. A lot of people seem to disagree with that. They didn't think he looked all that special. And, you know, again, it comes back to looking at the game in different ways. I don't think Jaquia is a traditional target forward. That makes me like him more, honestly, because I think that one of the biggest problems that the Sounders have is getting obsessed with roles in that sense. And, you know, Siggy saying we have to play with the target forward and going so far as to play with Pat Noonan or Freddie Montero or Brad Evans at target forward. I love having him there, and I hope that he can stay healthy for, you know, a week or two.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah. I will say this in defense of O'Brien White. You know, I think that, again, with O'Brien White, I've said this to a few people, is that, you know, if he scores that snap header in the first half, I think that the perception of his game and even that maybe the perception of his entire season changes pretty dramatically, because you just throw a goal onto his stat sheet, and all of a sudden it's like, well, all these little things that he's doing are much more, you know, are a much bigger deal because he's also scored that goal.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, there was probably his best play of the evening was ended up not even turning into a shot on goal. But what happened was he flicked the ball forward. Brad Evans comes running in. I want to say this is around a minute 11 or so. Tally Hall comes out and challenges Brad Evans. The ball ends up ricocheting back out to Zach Iwani, who has a pretty clean look at the goal and just shoots it over. But the flick that O'Brien made on the play was really a heady kind of play, and the kind of thing that I think we really want to see out of, you know, that we kind of expect to see out of Nate Jaquia, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And then O'Brien had the flip, the snap header. And then he had another header that was actually essentially cleared off the line by a Houston defender. And you know, it's like he had chances. And then he also had another good chance that was early in the game where he beat two defenders to the ball. He ended up not getting a very good shot on the goal, but it was a pretty amazing physical play just to be able to, you know, fight off these two defenders, control the ball, and get a shot off. Now, again, it was one of those things where you'd like to see him be able to score that, but just being able to create that opportunity, I think, really says something.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, the unfortunate thing for O'Brien White and really for the entire team is that the first two games, the competition has, you know, they have a way of making teams not look as good as they really are. They're very good teams. Houston is not so much a good team. I think that they're, you know, they're probably a little lower than what you expect to face in the rest of MLS, but they're a lot closer than I think LA and New York are, especially defensively. And I think that that's what O'Brien White is more capable of doing. And, you know, in that sense, if that's his level of play, then he's fine. I'd prefer Jaquia, and really I'd prefer, you know, a big target forward type DP from that position. But for now, O'Brien White's not really the problem. And, you know, if and or when Jaquia does end up getting hurt again, O'Brien White's not going to kill the team.
I mean, and that's what's frustrating in a lot of ways. And I think that's what's frustrating to a lot of people is that there's not a clear thing that you can point to on this team and say, well, they need to do. Well, it's clear everyone can say they need a score, but that's not really that's more of a symptom than it is the real sickness. And usually right. The sickness is that you're not, you know, creating chances. And in this case, you can almost look down the lineup and, you know, as we may disagree over, or reasonable people can disagree over Alvaro Fernandez's performance, but I don't think you're saying that if Alvaro Fernandez plays on Friday that the Sounders win 3-0.
No.
You can't, you know, and I don't think if you have Nate Jaquia playing instead of O'Brien White, I don't think you can say, oh, the Sounders win 3-0. You know, Freddie Montero hasn't scored now in something like over 1,000 minutes of regular, you know, dating back to last year. But I think you're crazy if you think that Freddie Montero is the problem. Eric Freeburg has done a lot. You can just kind of go down the lineup and you can, you know, it's like, who are the problems here? And I don't know that you can really point to anybody.
No, you really can't. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I think that when a team is struggling to do any one important thing, right, if they're struggling to defend, if they're struggling to create, or if they're struggling to convert, you know, chances into goals, of those three problems, I think that over the long run, I would far rather have trouble converting chances into goals, because these aren't, you know, it's not an issue of the Sounders getting the ball into good situations and then just completely wasting that opportunity. It's just, you know, it's been a combination of poor finishing in the first game, combined with great goalkeeping in all three games, and just some really, really poor luck. And you know, people are going to look for solutions to that. The solution is just to stop being unlucky, I think. I mean, if the Sounders can play as well as they did against Houston and New York, they're going to be fine. You know, they're probably not going to win the Supporters Shield, but there's really only one team that I think has any legitimate shot at this point of winning the Supporters Shield anyway. You know, they're going to be fine. They'll get into the playoffs probably with a pretty decent seed, and you know, this isn't a bad team at all, and I'd rather get the good luck out or the bad luck out of the way early than late.
Well, just real quick, since you bring it up, I mean, it is funny because at the beginning of the year, I think we would have said if we only have 1 point through three games, it's, you know, it's full on panic time. I just don't know what would panicking get you at this point, because it's not like the Sounders are playing bad. And on another reason, though, that it's not really panic time is that it's now becoming pretty apparent that this might be a one team race for the Supporters Shield. You know, yesterday, RSL just absolutely dismantled LA. The score was 4-1. You know, maybe it could have been a little bit closer than that, but the score is pretty indicative of the fact that RSL just essentially played the Galaxy off the field. And, you know, they've essentially played 5 competitive games up to now, because they've already played 3 CONCACAF Champions League. They've dominated their CONCACAF. They've outscored their opponent 6-1 in CONCACAF Champions League. They've outscored their opponents 5-1 in MLS. You know, this for all, you know, at 2 games into the season, this seems like a team that has a realistic, it's crazy to say this. It really is. I realize how stupid and maybe even ludicrous it is to say this, but this is a team that realistically has a chance of winning 4 championships this year.
Yes, they do. I mean, it's, I am not a fan of Real Salt Lake. In fact, I would go so far as to say in world football, they are one of my top 5 most hated teams. I can't stand their name. I can't stand the fact that their stadium has this really beautiful name that maybe, you know, makes you think of that part of the country and how gorgeous it is. And then you realize that it's for a strip mining company. I hate Kyle Beckerman. There's so much about them to not like, but the fact of the matter is they might be the best team in CONCACAF right now. I think that they could not only compete, but if they were playing in the Primera Division in Mexico, you might have to consider them a favorite, you know, in that league. I would honestly love there to be a hemisphere-wide competition that they could be in and, you know, play against River Plate and play against Santos and the best teams in this entire part of the world. Because I think, you know, maybe they wouldn't win that competition, but they'd probably perform pretty well. And they're just, they're on a different level.
No, and I think that's one of the things that's potentially very exciting about this year is that they're going to be playing... They're going to play either playing Cruz, assuming that they can hold on to a 2-0 lead at Saprissa, which I admit is not guaranteed, but the way they're playing, I just have a hard time imagining them giving up. Essentially, you know, if they lose 3-1, they advance. I mean, you got to like those odds. So, you know, they're going to be playing probably Cruz Azul or Monterrey in the CONCACAF Champions League final. That's should be a very good test. I think we'll get a much better idea of how good they really are when they play that. But it's too bad that they're not going to be able to play in the CCL group stage this year, because they amazingly did not qualify last year.
Yeah. Now, so is it kind of the same thing as with the UEFA Champions League, though, where if they actually end up winning the competition, they have to get an automatic berth, don't they?
You know, I don't think it does. I would have to look that up, but I'm not so sure about that, because, you know, maybe they do. I don't know. It hasn't been, the current format, this is only the third year of the current format. Yeah. And so I don't know all the ins and outs of it. And certainly in the last 2 years, it hasn't been an issue where I don't know exactly how Mexico qualifies all their teams.
Right.
And MLS has never been in a position where where it's an issue.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? Maybe you're right. Maybe there is a way to essentially backdoor your way into the competition. But it is kind of silly that it's funny to think that, you know, the Sounders are going to be in this tournament because they won the U.S. Open Cup. The Colorado Rapids are going to be in the competition because they won the MLS Cup. FC Dallas is going to be in it because they won the Eastern Conference Championship and the Western Conference Championship. Yeah. and the Galaxy will be in it because they won Supporter Shield. But Real Salt Lake, who is at this point just clearly the better of those four teams, is not going to be in this, or presumably is not going to be in this competition. But my point of all this was that there's not really any cream that's going to be rising to the top other than RSL. And I don't know that even in our wildest expectations that we thought that the Sounders were going to be as good as RSL looks now.
No, I didn't. I mean, I thought RSL, coming into the season, I thought RSL was pretty clearly the best team in the league. But I thought, you know, MLS is weird and fluky enough that, I mean, who saw Dallas being one of the best teams in the league last year? You know, so coming into the year, I thought, okay, well, RSL is better than the Galaxy and they're better than New York, but that's just on paper right now. And after two games in the league and seeing what they did in the Champions League, no one at this point is anywhere close to where they are. And with a lot of the teams like that in the league, you know, LA did not look nearly as good last night without Landon Donovan. I don't think that the Red Bulls would look as good. Well, they didn't look as good without Juan Agudelo. I think it'd be a similar thing if Rafa Marquez were out for any extended period of time. I don't think that's the case with RSL. And I mean, they played without some pretty key players last night and absolutely dismantled the Galaxy team, who was missing Donovan and Ricketts. And they're deep. Their starting 11 is the best in the league by far. And you know, their second 11 is probably better than some of the first 11s of some of the teams in the league. And they're just, unless something catastrophic happens, I don't see anyone coming anywhere close to them.
Yeah, no, and it's, I think the player that kind of is most illustrative of that idea is this Paolo Jr., who almost doesn't play in MLS competition. He hardly even plays in non-MLS competition, but whenever he does play, he just lights the world on fire. I mean, yesterday he had the assist on the first goal. He drew the penalty that led to the second goal, and then he assisted on the third goal. Or no, he scored the third goal.
Yeah.
Or the fourth goal, I should say. He scored the fourth goal. And it's just, I mean, this is a player who no one has heard of up until, you know, probably there's a lot of people that probably still have never heard of him. And yet he's quietly one of the more talented, he's probably the most talented bench player in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically RSL's version of Miguel Montaño.
Really, really good.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the amount of time that, you know, they get. And we look at the Sounders, you know, strength in their depth, and I think that they are stronger in their depth than a lot of teams in MLS. But I think Paolo Jr. could start and star for most teams in the league, and he never plays. And it's not like he never plays because Kreese is an idiot either. I mean, he's, you know, he's definitely second or third choice at that position, but he's awesome. And,
yeah,
you know, there's nobody's gonna touch them.
And I, just to switch gears a little bit, there was one other bit of kind of, I think it's probably lighter news, but it's news in any case. The Sounders, for the first time in their history, offered tickets to Groupon this week. And basically what the deal was is that there were some $37 tickets that were in the all-inclusive section, apparently in one of the corners in 300 section. And those $37 were being sold for $16. So it was a $21 discount. Certainly a nice discount. It's the first time that the Sounders have ever overtly offered a discounted ticket like this. And they went on sale, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday of this week. And they sold out within about 3 hours. And there was 350 of these tickets available. Now, for me, as a regular consumer, I think it's, you know, whatever. You're going to sell these tickets. There are tickets that, for, you know, seemingly were going to go unused. And it's a way for the Sounders to potentially reach out to some segment of the population who otherwise would not be going to a game. That said, there are some people that are really up in arms over this. You know, there's a post on Sounder at Heart right now that's basically, you know, saying that the Sounders are kind of undercutting their loyal customers by offering tickets at a discount. And I for the life of me, just don't see how that's the case. What are you feeling about this thing?
I think that people are overreacting, to say the least. I mean, I'm a season ticket holder, and I do not feel the least bit undercut or stung or as though I've been mistreated by the team. I mean, the Sounders have done some things in terms of season tickets and things like that that have annoyed me. It seems like if people are getting irritated about this, it's just because they look for reasons to get irritated about what the Sounders do.
I mean, let's be honest about what they're offering. I mean, what they're offering essentially is a extremely limited number. You're talking about 350 tickets out of a stadium of 36,000 people.
Right.
So it's a minute percentage of tickets that are available this way. But then on top of that, the tickets are only being offered a week in advance. There's no guarantee that you'll be able to get these tickets if they're only going to offer 350 or even if they offer 500 tickets this way. The demand is always going to outstrip the supply. So there's never going to be a guarantee that you're going to be able to get these kinds of tickets. And beyond that, they're bad seats. You know, they're not seats that, like, I mean, granted, some people are choosing to sit up there. And I guess for the people that are sitting next to the people that have got the discounted tickets, I suppose that there's some, what am I supposed to say? Yeah, you know, it's too bad you paid more than you ended up needing to pay for them. But part of what you're doing when you're buying season tickets, or even if you're buying single game tickets in advance, is that you're guaranteeing yourself a spot in the stadium.
Right.
With Groupon, you're not guaranteed, you're having to wait. You're hoping that the tickets are going to go on sale. And then on top of that, once they go on sale, there's no guarantee that you can even get them. You know, I just don't know. I just find it to be an insincere criticism of the Sounders.
I think it is. And I think that, you know, basically what the Sounders are doing is saying, we have these tickets. We can't sell them, you know, at market rates, I guess, is the reality. Let's go through this route and offer people, you know, because these were the all-inclusive seats, right? Is that what?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, let's maybe offer some people who wouldn't otherwise go to a Sounders game, maybe families who have been curious about going, and then this, you know, shows up in their inbox, and they're like, you know what, this would be a good night out, and it's a little more affordable than things would usually be, and we don't have to worry about food. I mean, basically, by asking the Sounders not to try to get rid of their tickets, you're asking them not to operate like a business any longer.
Right.
And, you know, sure, I think that that's a great altruistic ideal, but it also means that the team would be really bad because they wouldn't have any money.
I think that beyond that, it's if you are really getting worked up over this kind of discount, I assume that you're also the kind of person that gets upset when you buy a plane ticket and you realize that the person sitting next to you may have paid less for your ticket than you did, or you're the kind of person that goes to a restaurant and realizes that there's other people in the restaurant that are paying less for their meal than you are because they have a coupon. I mean, it's like if you dislike the idea of all discounts, okay, fine.
Yeah.
That's your deal. I'm not gonna say that you have to like all discounts. But if you're willing to accept some discounts, I just don't see how this is different than any other discount that you can get.
We have real problems, I think, with the way the club does some things. I think they're learning and getting better, but I think that we should criticize them when they mess up. And I think that, you know, that's part of what they push as part of their identity with the whole democracy in sports thing. It's on their shirts. But I don't know, man. This just seems...
No, I agree. And I don't want to be like, I don't want to come off as that guy who says, oh, the Sounders are above, you know, it's like, don't criticize the Sounders. I think the Sounders have done plenty of things that people can get upset about. You know, we can look at this, the whole Cascadia Cup ticket thing, and I don't really feel like getting into that right now. But I think that if you have criticisms over that, those are mostly pretty, you know, legitimate areas of that you can have differing opinions. But offering tickets that are otherwise going on sold at discounts, I just, you know, it's like you're looking for a reason to be upset at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if this were a thing where for every single home game, the Sounders made, you know, tickets available through Groupon, I probably wouldn't care, but I could maybe see. But this is the first time they've ever done it. It's not an uncommon thing at all for sports teams to do. I think the Mariners have done it before. I know for a fact the LA Galaxy did it for you know, their first
game. I'd be willing to bet that every team in MLS has tried to use – every team in a market that has Groupon that's popular, I guarantee if they have extra – you know, maybe the Earthquakes aren't doing it because they don't have a lot of tickets to give away to sell at discounts. But the Galaxy do it. I'm sure Chivas do it. FC Dallas, I know, has done it. You know, and granted, some of those teams don't have great attendances, but – it's like at the end of the day, if you can't criticize the Sounders for not opening up more seats and then criticize them for trying to get rid of the seats that they have.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that. I mean, this was a game, you know, Friday night, very early in the season against a team that, you know, no offense, Houston, but is not really all that exciting of an opponent. Who cares? Right.
No, and I know, and I guarantee that when Chivas comes to town, or when the Colorado Rapids, or any of these teams that just kind of lack the big name players, there's going to be some unsold seats, and there's going to be, the Sounders are going to look for ways to get rid of those unsold seats, because they do want, you know, there's a public perception issue of wanting to maintain this sellout streak. You know, they would much rather have 36,000 people there than 35,500, because it sounds better. And that's a reality, and I'm certainly okay with that. And if they have to sell some of those tickets for $16, you know what I say? Go out and get some of those $16 tickets.
Yeah.
If it bugs you.
Absolutely. And I kind of thought, you know, maybe I should sell my ticket on the market, you know, the ticket marketplace for face value, of course, before anybody gets upset, and take up this deal. I didn't ultimately, and I'm glad I didn't, because watching games from GA is just kind of more my speed. But I mean, at least they're not selling the away ticket allocation to a travel agency. Let's have some perspective here.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, well, I think that's probably a good place to call it a night. This has been, we're calling it officially episode 3 of Nos Audientes, right? We can agree with that.
I think so. It's a shame too, because we did solve at least 19 world problems in the last podcast.
It was, It's actually going to be like those lost books of the Bible.
Yeah. We didn't talk about the Sounders at all, but no. I think that we figured out Cold Fusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nobody will ever hear it now.
No. This is not that podcast, to borrow a great line from a great song.
Yeah.
This is a podcast about the greatest podcast in the world.
Yes, this is just a tribute.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for following me on that.
You're
anyway.
Welcome.
Well, I'm Jeremiah O'Shan. I'll let you say bye yourself.
All right. This is Aaron Campo. Thank you for putting up with my not having a voice.